This episode is brought to you by GetMobile ID, the smart choice for MDL implementations. Put citizens in control with GetMobile ID. Fully ISO compliant and UL certified for all transaction modes. Learn more at getgroupna.com. Welcome to AmbaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Amba community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back, everyone. This week, we are revisiting the topic of automated vehicles because AMVA has just released our updated version of the automated vehicles document, and we're going to talk about what that means and what's in it. And to talk to me about it this week, I have Greg Loper, the Vehicle Services Program Director from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, the Vehicle Services Division specifically. Greg, welcome to your first appearance on the AmbaCast.
It is great to be here.
And we're joined also by a familiar voice, Paul Steyer, AMVA's Director of Vehicle Programs.
Great, Welcome Ian. Back, Paul. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
So this is edition number 4, the fourth time we are publishing an update to a document that has been around for a little while now. And there's a lot of different content updates that we're going to talk through. But I think one of the updates that sort of encapsulates where this conversation has evolved to is a change in the title of the document itself. Greg, what's the new title?
The new title is the Guidance for Regulating Vehicles with Automated Driving Systems.
Now, we've always called it a guidance document as opposed to a best practice. That was something very specific as we were advising members in terms of regulation, because we know some jurisdictions were choosing to regulate, some are more hands-off, and our position is always you as a jurisdiction need to decide if you want to, but if you're going to, here's a common approach. But the second part of that title, Paul, the working group, the subcommittee must have had some conversations that led to that change.
We sure did. It really focuses on what's going on with technology, what's going on with research and development with automated vehicles and advanced driver assistance systems. Probably no surprise to our listeners that we're not seeing a lot of fully automated level 4 and 5 vehicles on the road. But we're seeing a lot of advancements with level 2, with level 3 potentially, with advanced driver assistance systems. And so the subcommittee really felt like, you know, where are we at today and in the next 5 years is the advancements with the advanced driver assistance systems, the movement toward a level 3, which is kind of that gradual entry into fully automated vehicles. So that's why you see the title change. It's really trying to help our jurisdictions deal with what's here today and what's going to be here for the next 5 years as we look to fully automated vehicles.
And Paul brings up a really good comment there that when I'm talking to people, a lot of times what I'll say is, I don't know what kind of vehicle you drive, but you drive an automated vehicle. And most of the time people look at me like I'm crazy. But if you've got cruise control, if you've got lane assist, all of those things fall within this. And some of the same stuff that we're going to talk about, if we're talking about a fully automated vehicle, also plays into what we're talking about with those kinds of technologies. And so it's really important that jurisdictions recognize just how broad this topic is.
As you think about that broader technology and the vehicles and the technology that's already in the vehicles today, how has that changed, Greg, what a jurisdiction needs to consider that maybe they weren't considering before? Certainly, we know the attention around full automation and testing those vehicles, other similar technology like truck platooning and things of that nature. But what I'm hearing you guys say is that there's a lot more in-between steps that are occurring real time, which we've talked about before, and it's a huge boon for the potential safety enhancements of vehicles. In terms of regulating the vehicle, registering it, dealing with drivers, how is that? What new challenges has that presented for jurisdictions?
I think there are a ton of challenges there. And I just want to start out with the fact that this is really good stuff that's happening. But at the same time, we've got manufacturers who are trying to distinguish themselves one from each other. And so there's different terminology. There's different ideas. And it's really easy for the consumer to not know what their vehicle does, mm-hmm. or to think that their vehicle does something that it doesn't do. Right. And so we start to deal with that. So there's a lot of conversation that's going to have to go on, particularly like in the law enforcement community. If somebody is stopped for speeding because they've got their cruise control set too high, nobody worries too much about that. But if I've got a lane control on the car and somehow that topic comes up in a traffic stop, How do I handle that as law enforcement? That's something that you have to think about. And particularly as we get different types of automation, maybe it just tells me that there's a car next to me. Maybe it moves me back over. Mm-hmm. There's all those different pieces that we have to think about and be prepared for. And that's just one small area of what's going on with automated vehicles.
Mm-hmm. And so what do we do in this document to provide guidance for jurisdictions that have to deal with exactly those topics that you raised, Greg? What are some of the new content that we've created in that space that might help members tackle those technologies that are appearing more regularly?
You know, it's really hard to say one specific thing. Yeah. When I think about this document, I'm going to say it's a monster. Yeah. And I don't want anybody to be turned off by that, but we're over 150 pages. We're over 150 recommendations, 48,000 words. So with every different part of the motor vehicle administration, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's driver's license, whether it's registration, all of those different pieces, there's going to be something that's going to touch your area of the vehicle.
Yeah. And it might be the rare person that's responsible for the full breadth of it in a jurisdiction that wants to consume all of it. But we know most of our members might need a chapter or four, as opposed to consuming the entire
piece. That's right. So like Chapter 5, Ian, we really, in fact, we brought in our driver's license team from AAMVA to help us bolster the driver's license area, because when you look at the advanced driver assistance systems and driver testing, driver's examiners, that's such a critical element for young drivers, old drivers to understand what are these bells and sounds and lights going off. And from an examiner's standpoint, you know, they may or may not have knowledge about these features in their own vehicles, but they need to be comfortable, you know, when these things are going on, the wheel all of a sudden starts moving. And so that's why we really brought in that's Chapter 5, which deals with driver's licensing and that part of it, is determining how we can best help our jurisdiction members work through the driver testing part, the driver examining part. So ultimately, we're using those tools, that technology, to the best of it, the ability that those tools that we can use them for, and you know, to help our roads be safer.
Well, and one of the things that I love about this is this, and AAMVA talks about this a lot, this is guidance. Mm-hmm. AAMVA doesn't say what you have to do, but it gives you ideas about what you should do. And so I'm not a driver examiner, and I'd probably be a horrible one, but I would not know what to do if all of a sudden I'm in there giving a test and I have them do back into a parking space and the car does it for them. Mm-hmm. Is that legitimate? Is that not legitimate? That's up to jurisdictions to decide. It's one they have to think about. You think about the same thing. Can they have a blind spot detection on during a test? It's a great question, and it's one that our jurisdictions need to think about so that when that examiner gets in that car with that person, they are capable of giving a good road test and giving it consistently across the jurisdiction.
So what do we say about those things in this document?
Yeah, so really, you know, the majority of those features, we want them to be used. You know, I think initially when this technology came out, we were like, oh no, you got to turn it off. You got to really know how to use, you don't turn your head and all that. But so we still want you to do those type of physical movements, but we want you to utilize the full capabilities of that technology. Mm-hmm. You know, and one example, Ian, that we brought into this was CDL testing. You know, how do the CDL testers interact with drivers for commercial vehicles when they're doing, for example, a pre-trip inspection? Mm-hmm. How does the driver interact with testing these advanced automated driving systems? You know, where do we go with that? So those are just features that we included with this document to help our members really be considering what the impact is.
And I think that's consistent with some of the work that our test maintenance subcommittee and the IDEC group had done previously, really differentiating between what are those safety enhancing technologies versus a convenience technology, such as self-parking versus lane correction that might prevent a crash. So the Chapter 5, then, is one of the newer chapters or expanded chapters.
Yes. Chapter 4, vehicle as well, expanded. We added some things. One in particular was how to interact with a vehicle with advanced driver assistance systems when I maybe rarely have ever used it. I rent a vehicle. Mm-hmm. I lease a vehicle for a short term, or a friend of mine uses the vehicle. So being mindful that Probably better be some education so this person doesn't jump into this vehicle just assuming it's going to all of a sudden drive by itself or be alarmed by all the things that are going on in it. The other thing is our...
So who's that a recommendation for, though? I mean, clearly it makes sense to have that education, but our members are not the one doing rental cars.
Absolutely. They're not renting cars, right? Yeah. So we do have a lot of recommendations for manufacturers, and we call them manufacturers and other entities. Yeah. So rental companies, leasing companies, that, you know, to make sure that they're doing some due diligence before they let this person just leave in this vehicle, that there's some education that takes place before they just walk away. Mm-hmm. Another example is there's been several pilots and testing with just shuttles helping the disabled community be able to move a little easier in a shuttle. But we have to be mindful that the shuttle operator many times did a lot more things than just drive that shuttle, that they helped those passengers maybe get on the vehicle, get secured within the vehicle, help them get off the vehicle, making sure they parked in a good location for those passengers to be able to move about freely. And so we really provide it to our members and the manufacturers and other entities to be aware they're going to pilot those type of vehicles, focusing on helping the disabled community. They need to be thinking about all the other elements that take place within that shuttle. So those are just examples of a couple additional areas.
And Paul, with that, one of the things that you mentioned there is we're talking about manufacturers and other entities. This document really touches a lot of different parts of government and beyond. And so one of the things that we talk about this is the importance of having a lead agency and the importance of having good communication. In Minnesota, our lead agency is the Department of Transportation, but I'm public safety. But the fact that we communicate back and forth and know what's going on, because this is moving so quickly and there's so much happening with it, that it's easy to lose sight of the new items. I will say that on the subcommittee, I don't think we have a meeting that goes by with where we aren't looking at something that's brand new or something that we didn't think about. Yeah. In fact, one of the things that was really interesting in preparation for this, I listened back to the AmvaCast you did in 2022 with Bernard Soriano, and you talked about where did you think this was going? Mm-hmm. And one of the big things that you were talking about that time was platooning, and we thought the idea of having one truck follow another truck was probably something that was going to happen. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but it's not nearly what we're seeing right now. And so this is moving so fast, and there are so many different interactions that are going on, and there's new technology that's happening all the time, that it's really hard for us to say, oh, this is where things are. Because as much as we love this document and the work that we put in on it, it's probably already going to be out of date by the time it gets published, and it's going to be time to work on edition 5.
Yeah. So what's the equivalent of truck platooning today? What's the hot flavor that may or not be what sticks?
Well, I'm going to let Paul, you say it if it's not me, but I think it is that I think there's a couple of things that we're looking at. We're still looking at the rideshare market. We're still looking at the shuttle market, but we're really looking at those enhancements of the car that you and I drive. That kind of cool thing, whether it's lane assist or I get up to speed and I'm able to let the car drive on the freeway. I think those kinds of things are what we're going to be seeing in the near future. But please don't play this podcast back in 2 years, because I will guarantee you that in some ways I'm going to be wrong, again, because it's moving so fast. Yeah.
And Ian, I'll add to that, one of the things that just the last 6 months we've been looking at is, you know, with all this technology in a vehicle and with the intelligence that a vehicle has, there are companies today that make devices that will make a vehicle that I would say is not an automated vehicle. It's like a level 2 vehicle, but it has a lot of a driver assistance features. You can have a very knowledgeable mechanic install these computers into your vehicle that then will quote unquote take the place of a fully automated vehicle. It will use all of these advanced driver assistance systems to make your vehicle feel and operate like it's a fully automated vehicle. Now, what's that bring for, you know, there again, driver testing? What's that bring for law enforcement, crash investigations? And the general public who maybe doesn't really realize that this ad that they're seeing isn't really something they should be trying on the open road, that it's just kind of a gimmick or something fun to do maybe on a track somewhere.
Well, what do we know about that technology? Has it been tested? Is it available? Is it in the marketplace?
It's in the marketplace today. We know mechanics are installing the technology today. We know the federal government really hasn't addressed it as far as Is it safe? Should it be allowed? Because it's so new.
And is that also because so much of this question of regulation has been based on what was manufactured? Mm-hmm. And now you have something that, well, that's not the vehicle, but you're altering the vehicle aftermarket. And there may or may not be any regulatory authority to do anything about that?
That's right. So our states then come and say, gosh, what do our jurisdictions say? What do we do about this? Now that we know that these components are being installed in vehicles on our roadways in our jurisdiction, what do we do about it? You can be assured that there'll be a crash at some point, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Law enforcement will be involved, and it'll be very interesting to see where it goes. You know, we hope that our citizens will be mindful enough to know that there needs to be some limitations on this technology and what you can do with it.
So do we have any guidance on that, or is that just another, okay, here's a question maybe we got to tackle in edition five?
That's it. Well, and I think, you know, that's a great point. I think what our group is really focused on, and our chair and vice chair, and Annette Sheeky and Dave Jenkins, have both said, you know, let's take some time focusing on maybe specific areas like we did with the personal delivery devices. Maybe there's time that we focus on a white paper or guidance on those real specific issues, which this would be one that we could potentially focus on.
Gotcha. So we started that with a conversation about the expansion of Chapter 4. Mm-hmm. What other chapters did we see
some other addition? Yeah. So the law enforcement area, you know, the data that these vehicles have, we really put a lot of emphasis on law enforcement having the knowledge of how to get the data. So when there's a crash in a vehicle that has these automated systems, you know, from a law enforcement investigator, they're going to try to figure out how did this happen. The big question we spent a lot of time with, Greg, was talking about who was capable at the time of the crash, who was actually responsible for operating that vehicle. And whether it's a fully automated vehicle or has a lot of the driver assistance systems, law enforcement is going to have to know. So we made a lot of emphasis in this document about making sure law enforcement finds the tools, that the technology and resources, so they can get to the intelligence of the vehicle to know that, you know, prior to that crash, post-crash, and during the crash, here's who was actually operating that vehicle. Mm-hmm. And that's going to have a lot of impact on, you know, a lot of issues as far as liability, responsibility. And so we know that in the future, that's going to be a really big area. So we expanded a lot of that in the law enforcement area. The other key thing...
Before you go on, though, yeah, I mean, that seems like that's been a question from the very beginning.
Oh, yes.
As soon as... who is liable? Who's going to be responsible? I didn't do it. The vehicle did it.
Yep.
We still don't have clear answers on this?
We don't have clear answers on it, but we know that there's technology available that law enforcement can utilize today to get into the intelligence of the vehicle, so it's making law enforcement aware that they need to make sure they do some more digging that they may not have, you know, our law enforcement folks, not necessarily IT experts. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to find the expertise, right, to help them get that information so they can really get to the facts of what took place.
Yeah, and as we see technology advance, I think that's going to become a more complex challenge. Mm-hmm. For instance, I might have the manufacturer of the vehicle. I might have an aftermarket automation. Mm-hmm. I might have a help desk that's providing breadcrumbing or options. The person who's sitting in the driver's seat might have the ability to grab onto the steering wheel. All of these things could interact within seconds of each other. And so who is the driver at any one time is going to be a challenging question that we're going to be answering for a long time.
The other thing, you know, I was going to mention to you is the lighting. Mercedes-Benz, some folks on our listeners have seen the Mercedes-Benz vehicle, their Level 3 vehicle, has some very unique aqua color lighting on the corners. And the idea is that would alert anybody to say this vehicle is operating in a fully automated mode. We haven't seen that yet today, and that's something that we've been able to actually have at some of our conferences to actually see the vehicle. And then what Mercedes is having to do is get jurisdictions to grant the authority to get some rulemaking set aside so they can use that specific color of lighting for that vehicle. So we call attention to that in our document that's coming. We've talked about it in the past, but it is going to come, and there are some jurisdictions that have already granted permission for, like, Mercedes to go ahead and utilize that.
And I think we can have confusion around those things because that lighting, by the way, it looks really cool, and Mercedes has done a great job mm-hmm. of designing their lighting. But for a lot of vehicles, you might see cool colored undercarriage lighting.
Right.
And I look at that and I don't know what an automated vehicle is. So I think, well, that's got really cool lighting on it. And I have no idea what that is. And so it's an idea that they're working on and they're trying to develop. But as it interacts with other things that happen in the space, people might not understand what it is.
And for a novice listener, why would that matter? Why would other motorists want to know that a vehicle is or is not in automated mode?
Yeah, so it could be motorists or it could be bicyclists, could be citizens.
Or anybody walking, else. Right? It comes back to the fundamental issue of
why would they want to know? So number one, it's typically is someone sees maybe somebody in the driver's seat that doesn't have their hands on the wheel. So whether I'm a pedestrian or bicyclist or roadway, I might be panic mode because, oh no, this car is going to run wild. I better call law enforcement. I better back off. And so the thought is that, oh, okay, that person may not be paying attention and have their hand on the wheel, but the light's on. So therefore the vehicle is fully automated. So that's, and then also from a pedestrian standpoint to be mindful that there's not maybe somebody that's actually seeing me. The vehicle is seeing me, maybe, right?
Well, the premise there is that somebody in non-automated mode might see you as well. So
yes, that there's still somebody in that driver's seat, right?
We know the challenge with pedestrian safety. That's another episode for another day. Yep. Yeah, Greg.
Well, and one of the things I think you want to think about with this is that automated vehicles act in a predictable way. But they're predictable for automated vehicles, and they're going to act differently than someone who's driving. And I will give you the classic example of automated vehicles are going to be programmed to stay within the speed limit. And for many of the freeways that we drive on, we will see people who are going a little above the speed limit. Yeah. And that seems to be normative. And whether that's good or bad, all of a sudden now I have an automated vehicle that's sticking to the speed limit, and I have others that are going at a higher rate of speed. Yeah. Knowing that that's an automated vehicle and that they're sticking to the speed limit, that helps me understand how predictable they are and what they're doing so that as I'm interacting with them on the road, I understand that and I can deal with them accordingly.
And same way with law enforcement, so they see that. If they see that, they're alerted by it. Law enforcement's aware of it as well. Having that knowledge that the vehicle is in that mode certainly is going to help them from not having to maybe make an unnecessary traffic stop.
And the other side of that is, with that type of notification, I know when it comes out of automated mode, so that vehicle might act differently than it was when it was in automated mode because now I have a human being who's taking control. Right.
And likely a lot less predictable.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So you talk a lot about law enforcement observing, and I know one of the areas expanded in this document is the law enforcement interaction plan.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit more about the changes there.
Absolutely. So just getting law enforcement more knowledge about how to interact with these vehicles and making sure that they have a process in place. So when they do, because they will encounter a vehicle with automated driving features, we try to provide more details. We do provide more details for law enforcement to be looking out for. Like we talked about the data, knowing where to find data, how to obtain the data, just being better prepared if there's a crash, who to turn to for resources, those type of things. So we made sure that we made it more clear, I think, than what we had maybe in the past as well.
And again, with the expansion of what we're looking at, everything from your very low-level cruise control type of thing to fully automated vehicles, you're going to have a different way of interacting with those vehicles depending on the type of vehicle. And we go everything from the high end where, okay, how is it that I'm going to be able to understand who's really in control of this vehicle if it's one of these shuttles that doesn't have a steering wheel, to, okay, I have someone who's maybe using an automated vehicle technology as an excuse for what they were doing.
So I know you mentioned earlier, you know, truck platooning may not be taking off as quickly as maybe we predicted, but we spent a lot of time in this document diving deeper with our partners in the commercial vehicle arena. What new and expanded areas are we recommending as it relates to that content?
Yeah, great question. So CVSA, Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, partnered with us to make sure that we incorporate some of their driver programs for vehicle automation. and some of their newer programs with allowing fully automated commercial motor vehicles. And so we made sure that we referenced that, included some of that information with it as well, just so our readers are aware of the fact that the commercial vehicle space has grown with the use of automation, and that that Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance has a pretty extensive program that they have in place with drivers. When our members, law enforcement, DMV folks, are interacting with it, they know that there's some resources with CVSA as well that they can turn to help in that space.
So, Greg, if I am your counterpart or another jurisdiction member sitting somewhere, you mentioned at the outset it's a behemoth of a document. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give a jurisdiction counterpart on how to make the best use of this monster, as you called it?
It is. And it's a monster because there is so much going on.
Yeah.
The first thing I would say is don't try to read it all at once. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the elephant. Eat it by one bite. Mm-hmm. And what I would do, and this is, by the way, with any adult learner, find the area that touches where you're at. So if you're in driver services, you're going to look at the driver part. If you're in law enforcement, you'll look at the law enforcement part. Look through the table of contents. See what interests you. One of my favorite parts of dealing with this has nothing to do with my job, and that's with personal delivery devices. Mm. And the personal delivery devices, we're not seeing a lot with, but they were kind of fun to look at. And so that gave me a touch point. The biggest thing for me on this document is just recognize what's coming and know that it's there. I would encourage someone to go in and read the parts that are applicable to them. Look at the other parts, because they're all going to be applicable in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then know that it's on the website, so that at the time that you're like, hey, I wonder how this interacts with automated vehicles, mm-hmm. you have the opportunity to go look at it. I will say that reading all 150 plus pages at once is probably going to be daunting.
Yeah.
And there's going to be many things in there that you're looking like, well, that's good, but that's not where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, Ian, that we're doing as well is we talked about those manufacturers and other entities and all the recommendations we have for them. We really encourage our jurisdictions, when they interact with these other entities and the manufacturers, that they utilize those recommendations and those resources that are in there. And then we, as AMBA leadership, are also putting ourselves in front of those groups that interact with those manufacturers and other entities. First of all, we want them to be aware that that guidance is there, and we want their feedback. Ideally, we're hoping for consistency across, our jurisdictions as it relates to how they utilize the automated vehicle testing, piloting, there again, for safety, for just for regulating. So we've really encouraged that piece from our manufacturers and other entities to be more engaged with that community, because they're such an important part of this process.
Mm-hmm. One of the pieces, and Greg mentioned it earlier, there's been this frustration of the lack, you talked about consistency between jurisdictions, but we've been frustrated with the lack of consistency in terminology across manufacturers. Have we been able to make any progress there? Is there any conversations happening in the community, whether in this document or outside of the document, to move that initiative forward?
That's a great question, Ian, because I was just at a conference in San Francisco last week where that topic was brought up about we need to make sure we're using standard terminology when we're describing features. And we talk about that in the document, about making sure that our jurisdictions are aware that when a manufacturer or other entity says, well, this is a level 3, 4, 5, or it has these features, that we ask very specifically what it is about those features. So we're making ourselves, putting ourselves in front of those other entities, so they hopefully will continue to utilize those resources that are already there, the terminology that's already there. And so I feel from our conversations I've had with a variety of folks in this area that I think more and more are understanding that we need to focus on that, using that main terminology. That mm-hmm.
And when we were putting together the document, we were looking at our terminology and we thought, well, we might have some better terms. But one of the things we did was we worked to make sure that we were using the standard terminology there, because this wasn't just American states.
Mm-hmm.
We had lots of different input on this document, between FMCSA, and we had Canadian jurisdictions. There was a lot of input on this. And so working on standard terminology, that's not something that AMFA controls. It's
For
something
sure.
that's agreed upon in this larger realm, and the terminology is still going to change and morph as we work through it.
Well, ultimately, either the manufacturers have to voluntarily agree, or some other authority that is not AMVA and not an individual jurisdiction would have to require them to do that. That's probably the only two possible paths to get there.
And the key for us was to let our members know that are going to be a part of this, maybe a stakeholder group or a working group, just to know that when a certain term is used, for them to make sure that they understand what that term means and maybe even have to clarify it with whoever they're interacting with. And they can use this guidance document to go back to it and look at that terminology, because that's really the key, is so we're all talking about the same feature or the same system.
Or to know that in the meantime, a feature that does the same thing to a vehicle may be called for different things depending on what vehicle it's in. So I want to finish by asking you both, obviously everything we've discussed, everything that's in the document is very much in the realm of what public agencies need to do in their regulatory administrative oversight type role. When this conversation of automated vehicles began well over a decade ago now, it was always built on the premise that when successful, the technology will be a win for safety because more than 96% of fatal crashes are caused by human error. So if we can remove the human error from the equation, we could have a safer transportation network. A lot of high-profile headlines when that doesn't happen and the technology goes bad. I am assuming, but it's always dangerous to assume, especially when there's a recording device in front of you. So I want to ask you what you're hearing in the field, that just like you don't see headlines that plane lands safely, there's a lot of successful deployment of the technology happening that's proving the promise that in time it's going to be an overall win for safety.
Ian, you're absolutely 100% right on that. That's the situation that we're dealing with. People aren't going to report on planes landing safely, and they don't report on automated vehicles that are working well. There's no question that there's development that continues to need to happen with this technology. And we see things going a little sideways. And so as we work through that, it's difficult for people to see those positives. But again, it's something that we see all the time, where when we're interacting with manufacturers and we're interacting with other entities, they're able to bring back some pretty solid data that says these vehicles, by and large, are very safe. And there's always going to be those exceptions. Those things are going to happen, and we're going to see those. Are they more safe than what the normal automobile is? From what I'm seeing, yes. And so it's just a situation now where people kind of have to get used to these, where they're seeing them out there.
And we're learning so much, and this is a whole, you know, the testing, piloting, deployment is, this is a learning process, and technology, you have humans behind the technology, sometimes mistakes happen, we learn from it, but I have to believe from what, you know, you talk to folks in the business here, that our technology and vehicles has improved dramatically over this time period, just because of what we learned from, you know, the testing, piloting, and the fully automated vehicles, we've been able to improve the advanced driver assistance systems and the use of cameras, LIDARs. That technology has improved. So you might say, well, we're not seeing a huge growth in the fully automated vehicles, but we're sure seeing a lot of improvement in the advanced driver assistance systems, the cameras, the detection devices that are in the majority of vehicles traveling on our roadways today. Much improved over the years, and a lot of that we can attribute to this testing and piloting that's going on with a fully automated vehicle. So, you know, we have to appreciate that this is a process we're going through, and the research will show millions and millions of miles have been driven by fully automated vehicles with no incidents, right, at all. So we have to remember that there's been a lot of successful efforts and a lot learned, you know, from this process.
Well, Paul, Greg, I'm going to let you go so you get started on edition number 5. I think you're already behind on the project plan.
Before you let us go.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I make a plug?
Yes.
I'd like to make a plug.
All right, go
for
it.
If you're listening to this right now and you say, hey, this sounds like fun. I'm interested in this. I'm wondering how this impacts my jurisdiction. There are some open seats on the subcommittee, and we would love to have you join us because every person that comes in and plays a part in this brings a different perspective and a different understanding. And I will say they're just fun to play with. And every day you get to see something that's just a little bit different. And you have a way that you can interact not just with your area, but with other areas. I'm motor vehicle, but I get to interact with drivers, mm-hmm. and I get to interact with law enforcement. And it's a lot of fun. And it's kind of fun to see where the technology is going. So if you're interested in this kind of thing, talk to Paul.
Yeah.
We would be more than happy to have you be a part of what we're doing.
And just the same, if your jurisdiction needs some support in this area, Paul, we still have our automated vehicle technical assistance program.
There's still technical assistance out there. We can do something virtually. We can look at taking a visit. Yeah, whatever works.
And so both the applications for the technical assistant and to be on the subcommittee, AMVA.org, where you'll also find edition number 4.
That's correct. And, you know, I'll just also say at the beginning of this document, we have a very detailed executive summary and revision comparison chart, so you don't have to read the whole 150 pages at the start. You can look at those first few five, six pages and give you a really good idea on where you want to dig into.
Mm. I was always a fan of Cliff Notes.
Yes.
I love it. Great. Paul, Greg, thanks so much for joining me today. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to our producers, Claire Jeffrey and Chelsea Hadwin. Till next week, stay well.
Thank you for joining us for AmbaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey and Chelsea Hadwin, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode was brought to you by Get Mobile ID by Get Group North America. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.